Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg.
I don't believe what I just saw.
A division of Bell Media.
You're listening to a special summer edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You know, I could think of a lot better things to do with this ice.
On Sports Radio 1290.
One hour down, one hour to go, one sandwich created. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, which could come to a surprise of nobody that we actually continue to talk about a sandwich.
Drew, I'm gonna follow this up. You know, I know Harrison Steak. You obviously know the Steak family well because you go to Myers three times a day, apparently. But I'm going to have a talk with Harrison. It's possible that he might decide that he's going to have to give us a sandwich. But there's one thing, and I just mentioned this to Richie off air. If we're going to put our name behind a sandwich, we want a pickle on the side for sure.
I believe the Hustler and Lawless sandwich does come with a dill pickle.
That has to be. It's
okay, we'll talk about that afterwards. Let's talk about teams that are right up. You know, the Jets were able to acquire Eric Fair for next to nothing because Washington has cap problems.
That's right.
And they're certainly not the only team in the NHL with cap problems. So let's talk about that for a segment.
Sure. Philadelphia Flyers.
Philly doesn't have as big of problems. I mean, they have 22 men on their roster, and they have a million.
It's a 23 man roster, so they have 1.57 left.
That's right.
And they have 1.57 to spend on that player.
Yeah, exactly. So. A better team to look at is the Buffalo Sabres. Mm-hmm. They have three roster spots to fill. 23 man roster. They only have 20 men on their active roster, and they have $350,000 in cap space.
Right. So 354. So they have $118,000 per player.
And the minimum salary is slightly more than $118,000.
Exactly. So what you have to do is you have to cut salary. Now, Vultures, a.k.a. teams below the cap, or maybe below the salary floor.
Or middle of the pack teams, or teams with a ton of money, see the Winnipeg Jets, see the lots of teams, the Nashville Predators. Yeah,
could be willing to get in there.
That's right. Now, let's start with the Buffalo roster.
Okay.
Buffalo roster, Buffalo has been...
It's a good roster.
One of the most active, teams in the free agency period, whether or not,
whoever thought they'd see the day of the Buffalo Sabres being at the top of the cap hit, right?
Exactly.
Now.
That's what we said to Mike Harrington last week. We said, Mike, are we in the bizarro world here where the Buffalo is a free spending large market team?
Now realize this, and of course, a guy like Alex Codily could very well be sent down to the minors.
That's right. That's a good way to get rid of, without actually having to trade away a player, you can always send him to the minors. You pay him the same salary,
right, but
he doesn't count against your books.
Now, that being said, Alex Codily is actually somebody who Lindy Ruff actually likes. You'd think otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Did you not see him play in Calgary because he was awful?
Well, no, I know he was awful he was awful in New York. It's a terrible contract. But you look at the other contracts, and I mean, you have Vanek, he's not moving anywhere. Pominville, they probably trade Pominville if they could, but he's got a $5.3 million ticket, and he's really not worth it.
No.
Ville Leino, they just signed him. Derek Roy is their number one center. Drew Stafford, beautiful player. They signed him to an extension.
It's something about guys named Drew today.
Yeah, I really like Drew Stafford. Always have. Brad Boyes is on a one-year deal at $4 million. Well, they acquired him to provide offense. Yogan Hecht, okay, you maybe say 3.5 for Yogan Hecht is a lot, sure, but he's a pending UFA, guys, and he's a guy they can use in all situations.
That's right. He's very defensive. Yes. He's very responsible defensively.
So you get to Kotelik, I throw him in the minors maybe. Paul Gostad is a great face-off guy. And then you have Gerby, McCormick, and Coletta, and Ennis. All those guys are good roster players. So, I mean, your option and your defense is a lot better adding Regier, but you've just added Regier and Erhoff. So in terms of, some kind of reprieve they can get from being that up against the cap, Kotelik seems like their best option.
Kotelik and the two guys that you mentioned earlier, because we pretty much went through the entire forwards, but I'd have to think Pominville is not attractive to teams at $5 million, but
for three more years.
Boys has to be included in there. But they did go out and get Boyes, and you have to think that they're still high on him.
Well, he's only got 1 year left.
Only 1 year left, but it's going to be one of those guys. And I mean, once again, guys, I like the Buffalo moves. I like the Leino move, but they've got a lot of money tied up in a lot of players that aren't exactly 50-goal, 100-point guys. They're gonna have to make a move quick.
I have to read the CBA closely, Ezzy, but I'm pretty sure. I mean, you need your 23 guys on the active roster.
Didn't New Jersey run into that problem last year?
But Kotelik didn't finish the season in the AHL. I guess they could send him. I have to look into that, see if they could send him down.
But Richie, Boyes at $4 million.
No, I know.
And Pominville at $5 million, and Hecht at $3 million. Kotelik at $2 million.
Three. 3.5.
$3 million. I mean, these are all guys that have pretty much you could find inconsistency in
now,
all of their
If you
games.
Look at Redden, Redden's been in the minors for so long, he's on the Rangers 23-man roster. Now, Kotelik is listed on the roster, so I wonder if they could send him down.
And free up the cap room that way.
And free up in the summer, or if they can only send him down when the season begins, thereby limiting their ability to sign free agents.
Well, but it's worth also pointing out that you can go 10% over the salary cap up until, I think, September, start a training camp or September 1st?
I'd have to look into the
Nuances. The, yeah. But you can go, so you can really spend right now, if the salary cap is, with the salary cap, $62
million? There's $64.3.
So you can really spend $70 million in the offseason. Yeah. And then you have to figure it out. But didn't New Jersey run into trouble in the regular season last year where they didn't dress a full roster?
Yeah, Calgary's done that too before.
Yeah, yeah. Because they, you know, because of the salary cap ramifications.
There's a per-day calculation, right?
That's right. You know, you can be, it's worth pointing out, it's not, it does get recalculated each and every day.
You know why that happens, Richie? And Richie will back this up. That only happens when you really can't move these guys. The Devils and the Flames really could not move some contracts because teams just would not take
Well,
them.
No, and they're also too cheap to send them to the minors.
Well, the fear also is if when you send them to the minors for a salary cap, what happens is when you call them back up, they get called up at half the wage and people claim them.
That's right.
So that's the fear.
That's right, and that's worth pointing out. You send a guy, you got a guy who's making $5 million. Take Wade Redden. What's Wade Redden making? He's probably making $6
million.
Let's say he's making $6 million. New York sends him to the minors. Nobody's going to claim him for that $6 million salary. New York tries to bring him back up to the NHL.
Nobody claims him at that.
Nobody claims him at that salary either, but it's worth pointing out if he was somebody who might...
6.5.
Well, you know,
6.5,
some players might be worth it to take a stab at him when you only have to pay him $3.25 million as opposed to $6.5 million.
Remember Sean Avery?
Exactly.
Hopefully the Sabres don't get into a position that the Flames were in. And I remember we were talking about this last year. The Flames were so desperate to get rid of Steve Staios, and we talked about this last week, Corey Sarich. They were so desperate to get rid of those two guys who are making a lot of money for what they... Staios was a healthy scratch. So hopefully the Sabres don't get into a situation where they have to get rid of someone and no one will take Kotelik. I don't think it's that bad. I think the players that we're talking about are not as bad as Staios and Sarich. Unfortunately, Sarich is a good physical defenseman, but when he's making $3 or $4 million or whatever he's making, a team's not going to just pay that much money for a guy who can't even crack their top six, right?
Yeah.
And now let's talk about the other teams, though, Drew. We talked about Washington. They have $394 in salary cap space.
$394,000
And they have to sign
one player.
And he's a good player.
Yeah, he's a very good player.
Young pairing defenseman.
That's right.
Played against the best players in the other team last year. That's Carl Alzner, former Calgary Hitmen World Junior player. Solid stay-at-home defenseman who can move the puck well and pairs very well with John Carlson. I've been writing about him because I'm writing about Washington in this in the Hockey Prospectus annual. And Alzner is a very interesting case, guys, because he is a very good defenseman. They have to re-sign him. They're going to go over $394. They have to. But it's not going to be a small contract, so somebody else has got to move there.
That's right.
And that's a domino that has to fall. Now you have Pittsburgh. They're maxed out a 23-man roster.
And that's why, you know, in Washington's case, they'd like to get rid of... I mean, a guy like Alex Semin is a guy that they've been talking about that could potentially be available.
I don't think they've been talking about it.
Well,
I think the media has been talking about it.
Well, because they're looking at the roster and they're trying to you know, put the pieces together.
That'll be last resort.
Yeah, absolutely, that'll be last resort. I don't disagree with you there, but I mean,
last resort. I mean, he's pending UFA guys. Who knows where he's going to go after the year? If you can get good value for him, you'll trade him.
And you can probably get better value for him now than you will be at the trade deadline.
He's just so enigmatic. You don't know where he's going to... Never mind what he's going to do on the ice. He's going to score goals, but where he's going to sign.
But in Washington's case, Tom Pote is an interest. Tom Pote is apparently going to be on long-term injury, so that, you know, that'll free up some salary, $2.875 million. So, you know,
even so, as you can see by the math, with Fair on the books, they wouldn't have been able to sign Alzner.
That's right.
They would have had to do something else.
That's why the Jets looked at Washington. They said, "Hey, this is an opportunity to get a guy from a team that has, you know, they can't counter their offer because, you know, they're really in trouble either way." And the Jets were, you know, who knows if they were the actual first to get in there, but they obviously made the best of the offers.
Good point on Pody, by the way.
Yeah. And they got the player. And that's what you have to do. That's what the bottom teams in terms of the cap right now, the teams with the most flexibility are, you know, the Jets. They are the Islanders, the Predators, the Avalanche, the Coyotes, and then the Hurricanes.
They all have at least $18 million of cap space.
And, Drew, obviously there's other reasons. If Pody is going to be on long-term injury reserve, then George McPhee is thinking, okay, we got to find someone else, and that's why they replaced him with Hamrelick. But if you have to replace him, why pay... So, do you have to spend $4.5 million? Because that's your problem
$3.5 million.
Yeah. But
he replaces Hannon, too,
And that's your problem right there. Obviously, they were going to overpay a little bit for Joel Ward. But to me, they could have gotten somebody off the free agent market or somebody else.
This is a short-term thing. He addressed their needs. Their need is rugged players, gritty players like Troy Brower, like Joel Ward. You're adding a defenseman on the back end who can play in kind of all situations under limited minutes in Roman Hammer. Like, you don't love the signing, but he's there to replace Hannon, obviously, as you mentioned, Pody. But there are some salary cap problems, but with their talent, I mean, they'll find a way to make it happen.
That's why you look at teams like the well-managed teams, and I'm going to include the Jets in that, and I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. So far, I have no reason to believe differently. Sure. But Nashville, we know, is well-managed. We know Carolina's well-managed. So you look for Nashville and Carolina and Winnipeg to make some moves now where they can sort of be scavengers and pick the bones of the teams that are right up against the salary cap.
Colorado's an interesting one because all they have to sign is a smooth-skating Kyle Komisky. Yet they've already have their 23-man roster, so if they really want to save money, they can.
And, Drew mentioned...
The reason I didn't include Colorado is because there's no way that Greg Sherman gets the designation as being a good general manager on the Varlamov trade.
Exactly, because it's interesting, because you look at their roster now, if they're trying to save money, you'd say, oh, they'll be bad again. And, now they have Landeskog, now they have Matt Duchene, and they have young talent up front there. And they just acquired Eric Johnson. Oh, it'd be great to add one more young player.
They traded away their first-round pick for a goalie that... So I'm not convinced is a number one goalie.
Based on their salary situation right now, they can take on a big contract, but what's the goal? What's the end goal? Aren't you developing franchise? It doesn't make sense.
A lot of people are comparing Winnipeg to Nashville in the sense that they're going to probably spend a similar amount of money and structure their team a certain way. But the big difference there is, and maybe we'll talk about it a little bit later, we'll have to wait till the next show, but Nashville is a really tough problem because their entire team, not only is it built around Pekka, but it's Shea Weber, and now that's a huge problem for David Poile, whereas Winnipeg, Zach Bogosian is not the same problem because you're going to sign him to 2 years, whereas Weber you want to sign to 6 or 7 years.
That's right.
So Winnipeg
and Zach Bogosian is not Shea Weber.
Winnipeg has a lot of freedom. If you sign Bogosian, you're not going to be hamstrung much. The Jets have really avoided making any bad decisions, and we expect them to get Wheeler and Bogosian wrapped up quickly, maybe not quickly, but in the next few weeks. And all they have to do is fill holes, Drew.
I'll tell you what,
they're not easy negotiations. So I know we got to go to break here, Drew, but I think I wrote articles about on the Legal Curve about Bogosian's contract and Wheeler, what I projected both of their salaries to be. You can check it out on the website because we're getting up against the break. But one thing's for certain. These negotiations aren't easy, and they don't seem to be going particularly well, at least in the Wheelers on both sides. They're not that close. Bogosian, we don't know. And also another thing to consider here, guys, is as much as we're talking about players who want to play here, these are two American boys.
So they may not have the allegiance.
Now, one's from upstate New York, and Bogosian, one's from Minnesota and Wheeler, so close to the border. But it's something to consider.
Let's go to break. Why don't we open up the phone lines, hear from the fans in the next segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We want to hear from you. 780-1290. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and you can always email us info@illegalcurve.com. We'll be back after these commercial messages. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You guys are grooving?
Little instrumental Beastie Boys, because my man Tim knows music.
That's good, Ezzy. Wow.
Yeah, that was nicely done,
Ezzy. Two Beastie Boys.
I don't like the idea of Remus is suggesting coleslaw in the sandwich. It's a bad idea. Put it on the side. If people want to throw it inside the sandwich, that's their prerogative. But don't make it an imposition on the sandwich eater to have coleslaw inside there.
Coleslaw takes no backseat to gravy.
Interesting. Welcome back to the show, 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290. We want to hear from you. Let's start. I believe we have Chris on the line. He's calling from Hazel Ridge. Chris, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, thanks, guys, for taking my call. Appreciate it.
Chris, where's Hazel Ridge? I'm not familiar with that.
North and east of town, just past Oak Bank.
Okay. You want to talk about the veteran defenseman. What's on your mind?
Well, you're talking about developing this team, building the core into hopefully a superstar presence. I look at Zach's play on defense, and I just wonder who's the veteran defenseman that's really going to show him the ropes. I mean, to me, Hainsey, I know you can't get rid of that contract, but I just don't see who's going to teach him the ropes. I was actually hoping they might bring in Regier to do that for him. And similar up front, who teaches a very poor defensive team, by the record last year, how to back check, how to play defensive. Now, I'll throw it back to you guys, but my suggestion is it might be cheaper to bring in a few extra assistant coaches like Charlie Huddy, like Mike Keane, to do that training and development day in, day out with the guys as opposed to bringing in veteran free agents. But, you know, I'm still holding out hope Solani will come in for his farewell tour, but I'll leave it at that. I'll throw it back to you guys now.
Chris, appreciate the call.
Thanks, Chris. I mean, I think up front, one of the things is they need to improve offensively because, you know, a good defense is a good offense, for lack of a better word there. And I think what I mean by that is sustained offense takes a lot of pressure off of your defense, Chris, and right now they don't have enough of offensively capable players to do that. Defensively, I mean, Bogosian played the majority of last season with Johnny Oduya. Johnny Oduya is a good puck mover. He can skate pretty well. I mean, they didn't have great underlying numbers, but they played against the other team's best players. I think there's a nice mix of veterans in Mark Stewart and Oduya and Hainsey on the back end to complement Bogosian, Enstrom and Bufflin. And then you have Randy Jones and Meech in there. I think veteran-wise, they're okay on the back end. And I don't really think they need more veterans in the lineup. I think they just need more time.
And it was Chris was our caller, right?
Chris, yep.
For Chris's comment, that we don't have anyone who has the defensive acumen and the international experience that Robin Regier had. But, you know,
right,
obviously, you know, people listen to the show know that I'm a Devils fan. And Johnny Oduya is actually a pretty underrated defenseman. There's a reason why he was given $4.5 million a year, and the Devils weren't exactly happy to trade him, but they needed to. Atlanta insisted on him as part of the Kovalchuk trade. And Oduya is actually pretty underrated defensively. He's a really good skater, played in the Swedish Elite League. And like Richie said, these guys like Mark Stewart who played in Boston, Ron Hainsey, these are guys that are in their late 20s, good defensemen, and, you know,
3.5 a year for Oduya.
Or, sorry, 3.5. I keep getting 3.5 and 4.5 with all of these bucks flying around. But
you just got too much money on your hands. That's your problem, Ezzy.
But the thing is, I spent it all on my lime green shirt. But so
not really lime green, but
so
anyways.
It's lime. So I think that you shouldn't be that worried about who we've got back there, and you know when you talk about some of the guys that we mentioned earlier, Derek Meech being possibly the sixth defenseman or seventh defenseman, that's not bad. And you know Richie actually mentioned this long before the Atlanta Thrashers announcement was made that they were moving to Winnipeg. Zach Bogosian actually played big-time minutes last year, and it was let's be honest, the team wasn't very good. His offensive numbers weren't Doughty-like. He had 25 points or whatever, but Zach Bogosian has a lot of talent. Let's not kid ourselves. He was a third overall pick behind Doughty and Stamkos, and even though his offensive numbers weren't very good and his plus-minus wasn't really good, you can't focus on that.
Right.
He played pretty well last year, and when you're 20 years old, 19 years old, playing against top guys in the Eastern Conference...
That's right.
I mean, there's something to say about that,
Exactly right. When you have guys like Bufflin and Enstrom on the roster who are capable of playing some big minutes, and Craig Ramsey, a defensively inclined coach, is playing you out there against the top players, that says something about your skill level. Now, of course, his offensive numbers weren't necessarily there. Playing against the other team's best players and without a great forward group, you are in your own zone a lot. Also, when you're not playing top power play unit like Bufflin and Enstrom were, you also see a hit to your points. Let's see how he does employed in an offensive situation and in the right, you know, starting the other team's offensive zone and not always playing against maybe the team's best players, getting shifted around a bit. I think there's a lot of opportunity to grow here, and I think that any talk to them trading him, I think, is premature.
And Richie,
I don't think it made any sense.
Drew, just quickly, I think fans, you know, especially people that have season tickets, I think people are going to be surprised at how good our defense is going to be.
I agree.
Bogosian and Oduya and Enstrom, those are slick skaters. Those are fast guys with offensive talent, and they're good defensively, too. I mean, our defense, in my opinion, is pretty good.
Yeah, defense is not something I'm worried about.
There's a lot of money.
Especially when your defense is I'd say above average, and then your goaltending is, which nobody has talked about because everybody feels as though they're in good hands with Andre Pavlich in net.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, when you only have to really worry about one area, you're doing something okay there.
Yeah, it's a good bait. Again, we've said it so many times, it's not an expansion team, guys.
No, certainly not an expansion team, and it's a better team to have received than Phoenix was. Let's go back to the phone line, 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290. George is calling from downtown Winnipeg. George, welcome to the program.
Hi, good day, guys. How are you doing?
Doing very well. You want to know about the retired numbers, is that correct?
Yeah, I wonder what the Jets are going to do. We're 9, 10, 25.
Yeah, it's a good question.
It's a good question.
We don't know the answer to that. I mean, that's sort of what I was dealing with in my article today on illegalcurve.com, is how to balance the nostalgia and of the old team
right.
with the new team going forward. I mean, to me, I think you keep those numbers retired.
Well, I would think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't see anybody wearing Bobby Hall's number 9. It just doesn't work for me.
Evander Kane had to switch numbers.
Yeah, I think if you said to Evander Kane, you know, Evander, we want to retire your number one day, but, you know, Bobby Hall's got number 9. I think he's going to be okay with that.
I agree. They could opt to honor the number.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I'll be honest, George, I think you should retire them, and I think there should be a new ceremony. In reality, let Bobby Hall have his moment. You know?
Yeah, well, as well as the other guys, too, that's Howard, right. Chuck, and Steen.
Absolutely. Howard Chuck retired
Howard
in
Chuck
Phoenix.
Was retired
it's
in
joke.
Phoenix. He was
it's
never
joke.
Actually retired in Winnipeg.
It's a joke. So, I mean, you should give him his retirement ceremony. And now Steen, I remember if Hall had one. That was a long time back. Steen had one the 1995 year.
Yeah, Steen had one, I think, wasn't it in the Jets' funeral? Wasn't that?
Yeah,
the,
95.
I think that's where they retired it.
Yeah.
Quote-unquote Jets' funeral.
But at least give, the other two have had theirs. At least give Howard Chuck his day, because, I mean, the guy gave you his heart and soul for
Why did they have that Jersey retirement ceremony in
so
Phoenix?
It was so awkward.
Why did they have it in Phoenix?
Why do they have a team there?
Well, that's another good question. George, we appreciate the call. Thanks very much.
Okay, could I just make a comment that
sure.
with what we got cooking here and with what Edmonton's got cooking in Edmonton, in 5 years, it's going to be a hell of a division.
That's right.
Absolutely. Hopefully that, and that's, of course, George raises a good point there indirectly, and we're going to talk about that probably in our final segment tonight. We'll save that for the final segment. The question about divisional realignment and everything else, you know, it's but by the sounds of it, based on the, you know, supposed ideas that are floating around, we're not going to be in the same division as Edmonton and Calgary.
I'm actually in favor of that, and people say might say why, and I would say, well, you know, first of all, you want to stay in the same time zone.
Geographically, absolutely.
You want to make it as easy as
Columbus,
possible.
Columbus, Chicago.
Columbus is in the east.
Columbus is in the east.
Eastern time zone.
Yeah.
But Chicago, okay. St. Louis,
Minnesota.
Nashville is two. Yes. Yeah. So that's four, right? There.
The only problem that
Dallas is two. If
you know,
they move,
we can argue about, you know, geographics isn't a word. I feel like George Bush, George W. But the closest cities in the NHL to Winnipeg are Calgary and Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Yeah.
And
Chicago is as close.
And
closer
teams,
than Calgary.
And those teams wouldn't be in our division if we were in the Central. But the time zone issue, I agree with you, makes complete
Over
sense.
Over the span of an 82-game season, that's you right. don't want to be flying through time zones. Look, it's not going to be this unbalanced schedule again, I don't think. I think they realize that they're going to get rid of that. So
yeah,
I think you're still going to see the Oilers and you know, instead of seeing the Oilers and the Flames six times or three times in Winnipeg,
two.
You'll see them twice.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. You can still develop rivalry.
It'll go back to the NBA schedule, and like the NHL was before. So you're going to play your in-division teams. You know, you'll play them twice, probably.
Yeah.
And then, well, I don't know how they're going to work it, but it depends on how many teams are in division. But you're going to see everybody
see
at least
every
once.
Team, exactly. You'll play a home-and-home against the other conference. You know, so that's 30 games right there. And then they'll figure it out with everything else.
If we join the Central Division, Drew, based on the fact that these teams like Nashville weren't in our league at the time when the Jets were here, you'd have to think Chicago becomes your arch rival, and I have absolutely no problem with that.
And let me say this. Before the Jets 1.0, I guess, did leave town, Chicago was a huge rival.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
Eddie Belfour, Jeremy Roenick, Chris Chelios,
that's right.
coming into
we
the old
Chelios.
Arena.
Yeah. You know,
yeah.
you can't, as much as geography, you know, to some extent factors into rivalry. I think it factors in more for the fans than it does anything on the ice. Denver and Detroit are nowhere near each other. But they had the bloodiest rivalry in the game in the last 20 years, I'd say.
Vancouver and Minnesota are huge rivals,
you know,
not very close to each other.
It's based on quality of team.
Quality team. If you got two good teams in the same conference, there's your rivalry. You know, who cares about geography? They find a way to play each other in the Western Conference Finals. There's your rivalry. That's the team you're going to hate first and foremost. Anyways, let's go to break. We'll talk about that more later on in the show. Coming up after these commercial messages, George Richards of the Miami Herald is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. This certainly wasn't the thrash metal we were listening to during break there.
Punk, no effects.
Oh, sorry.
I said thrash metal. I guess I'm getting older.
You lousy kids turn your music down, that sort of thing?
I know we're waiting for George Richards to come on the line here. Can we talk a little bit about Florida's prospects?
Sure.
We mentioned Winnipeg before. I was mentioning George Richards has a very good blog. Everyone out there should read it, whether or not you're a Panthers fan. It's very good.
Well, you know what? We need to all become Panthers fans right now because they're going to be our team. We're playing them 6 times this coming year. So, you know, we all have to become Panthers fans. Let's go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
And let's welcome to the program George Richards from the Miami Herald. George, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, no problem. How you doing today?
We're doing very well. You looking forward to Winnipeg in February this coming season?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. You know, I'm going to have to load up on the cold stuff, you know, the thick jackets and all that stuff. But, yeah, it should be fun. It'll be neat to see that market and how it responds to having the NHL back. And, you know, I've got a lot of friends in Atlanta, and it's tough for them, but I think a lot of people around the league are excited to see, you know, how Winnipeg to react to having the team back.
Absolutely. George, the Panthers, one of the most active teams in the offseason so far. What's been the reaction to all the moves and the trades and the free agent signings in South Florida so far this offseason?
Yeah, it's been very positive. I think for the first time in some time, the Panthers have been the talk of South Florida, at least sports-wise, and I think that's been helped along, obviously, with the Miami Heat being locked out. Being locked out, and the Marlins being, 14 games out of first place. So these bold moves by Dale Talon and company have been welcomed in South Florida, and, you know, people are talking about them, mainly because there really isn't a whole lot else to talk about. But they've been pretty popular these days.
George, how close were the Panthers to re-signing Thomas Fokun?
Doesn't sound like they were very close at all, only because the offer they made, and I heard that they offered him 3 years, $8 million. That was the final offer. Thomas and his representatives said, thanks, but no thanks. We're gonna try our hand at the free agency market. And, you know, they lost out on that deal. They left a lot of money on the table, and Colorado went out and got a new goalie, and the Coyotes went out and got a new goalie, and nobody needed a goalie anymore. So at the end of the day, I think Thomas did all right. He probably took a pay cut, but he's going to the Washington Capitals team that's just loaded, a team with a real shot. It went in the Stanley Cup. And for the first time in his career, Thomas Fokun is on a Stanley Cup contender. So from that vein, you know, it ended up okay. I mean, the pay cut hurts. He made a lot of money here in Florida. He's made a lot of money over his career. He can afford 1 year pay cut. In the long run, I think this is going to be really good for his career.
George, what's the catch there? Why didn't he receive a lot of money? I mean, by all accounts, and I mean, my opinion, the guy's one of the top 10 netminers in the league. What?
I completely agree with you. I just think he priced himself out of the market. You know, he thought he was going to hit a payday with Colorado. You know, and they make that big trade with the Capitals. So they turn towards Phoenix. They sign Mike Smith. All of a sudden, nobody wanted to pay the kind of money Thomas Fokun wanted. And, you know, I'm sure that the Detroit Red Wings, I read that the Red Wings had made an offer. I'm sure it was close to the $1.5 million that Washington offered him.
Wow.
And, you know, there just wasn't a market for him.
You know, this team's obviously signed a ton of players, Jovanovski, Upshaw, amongst others, and there are many. Why, after all those signings, would they entrust Jose Theodore with the net mining duties?
Yeah, you know what? I think, you know, the Panthers are improved in many, many aspects of the game. Obviously, this is a team that couldn't score goals the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like that's improved. The defense has improved. The defense was pretty good as it was, and the defense is better. They are weaker in goal. There is no doubt about it. You're going into the season with Jose Theodore and Scott Clemenson as the backup, or Scott Clemenson could be the starter.
Yeah.
You know, it is Jose Theodore's job to lose. But there's no way that you could say that Scott Clemenson couldn't win that job. You know, Jose's best years are probably behind him. But, you know, with the good defense in front of him, you know, maybe they get a good couple years out of him.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by George Richards of the Miami Herald. Now, George, one of the more peculiar aspects of the deals that the Panthers signed is that they signed a number of 4-year deals.
Mm-hmm.
Why did they do that as opposed to the shorter-term contracts?
I think you know, Dale Tallon figured he wanted to build the team. He wants people to know this is the team going forward. I think part of the problem in Florida is you had so many guys on short-term deals that every time you turned around, you know, you're worrying about the trade deadline, you're worrying about this, you're worrying about that. Plus, I think a lot of these guys to come to South Florida, this franchise hasn't, you know, isn't exactly burning things up. They haven't made the playoffs in a decade. They had to overpay a little bit, and they had to get a little more term than maybe they wanted. Now, some of these guys, I don't think they're worried about that too much. Other guys, you know, Ed Jovanovski gets a four-year deal. Nobody expects him to finish that. I mean, you just can't. At 35 years old, he looked a little old last year. I think they might get one, two good years out of him and then worry about that later. But as far as some of the other guys, they think these guys are in their prime. They're 26, 27, 28 years old. These aren't guys that signed a four-year deal that this is their last contract. These guys, you know, will be 31, 32 years old when these contracts expire. The Panthers feel that these guys are right in the prime of their careers. Let's see what they've got.
I'd have to agree with you, except for Ed Jovanovski. Whose idea was it to put the credit card down on the table? Was it ownership or was it general manager Dale Tallon?
Well, I think it was the National Hockey League. I mean, you know, you've got a salary cap floor. You've got to get to that. You know, I don't think if the salary cap floor was $35 million, I think that's where the Panthers would be around. I think it would be at $35, $38, $40 million. But it's not. It's, you know, $46, $48 million, whatever it is. That's where the NHL says you have to be at, and that's where the Panthers are. You know, so, you know, the money had to be spent. One way or another, it wasn't like it was their option. I mean, if a lot of people didn't understand that in South Florida, they were like, well, they'll be like the Marlins and be cheap. Well, you don't have the option to be cheap in the National Hockey League because you have a salary cap ceiling and you've got a floor. So they had to get to that, and that played the biggest role in this.
George, talking about, there's been a lot of changes and turnover since the end of the season. Peter DeBoer was let go, Kevin Dineen in here. And what do you expect, or what are you hearing from the organization and from Kevin himself, to expect from this team next year, maybe stylistically, or, you know, how he intends to employ a lot of the players? What do you see from him?
I think you'll see a lot more aggressiveness from the forward position. They're going to move the puck a lot more. This was a team that mucked and grinded under Pete DeBoer. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, you know, that's what this team was. There weren't, you know, they didn't even have, at the end of last year, this was an AHL team. I mean, for all, you know, aside from Thomas Vokoun and mm-hmm. David Booth and Stephen Weiss. This was an AHL team last year for the most part. You know, so they did what they could. This team was in every single game. Very rarely did the Panthers get blown out by more than, you know, get beat by more than two goals. I mean, they were in more one-goal games than any team in the league last year. So Pete DeBoer and his staff did something right, especially with the roster limitations that they had. That said, with this new team, I think you're just going to see a lot more aggressiveness. You're going to see them go with the puck, go to the net a lot more. They've got guys that can get dirty goals. They've got guys that can snipe a little bit. And they're going to be able to get some offense going through the blue line. And like we just talked about with Jose Theodore and the goaltending situation, the Panthers are going to have to score more goals than they did last year because Thomas Vokoun isn't there anymore.
Sure. George, we'll let you go on this last question. I mean, definitely a more talented roster than what they put out on the ice last year. What are the expectations? Is the organization expect to make the playoffs realistically, or are they just going to be happy to be a more competitive team building towards the future?
I think, you know, when you make this kind of change, I think, and this step change was definitely needed. The Panthers finished in last place in the Eastern Conference last year. As bad as this franchise has been, believe it or not, that's the first time in franchise history that has happened. So change was definitely needed. This was a complete overhaul. You know, they went into the offseason only $18 million on the books committed towards next season. They've got basically a whole new team. It's easier to list the guys who are left than who left, you know what I mean? I mean, there's just so many guys aren't here anymore. And we're talking about even into the AHL, you know, the prospects. I mean, they've been overturning that as well. They're completely changing this organization. I think they're saying no more excuses. You know, that's one thing the Panthers have always been good at. They've always got an excuse why this didn't go right, this didn't work, da-da-da-da-da. With Dale Tallon in here, now you got Kevin Dineen coaching. No more of that stuff. They're going for the playoffs this year. And I think, you know, you look at the Southeast Conference, you know, Atlanta was a team on the rise last year. They hit a bad patch, didn't make the playoffs. But you can say that the Winnipeg franchise is one on the rise. Washington, mm-hmm. very strong. Tampa, very strong. Carolina maybe coming back a little bit. So it's not going to be easy. I think the Southeast Conference is going to be very tough. So that doesn't make it easy on the Florida Panthers to make the playoffs. But if any year three teams from the Southeast Conference made the postseason, I think this might be the year.
George, final question, part two. We would be remiss if we didn't ask you, we're based in Winnipeg, if we didn't ask you about Kendall McArdle, and quickly maybe mm-hmm. a little description of what he brings to the table.
Well, Kendall, as a junior player, was a pretty good scorer. You know, he's had to change his game a little bit. That was one thing that Pete DeBoer really stressed to him, is like, dude, for you to make it in the NHL, you're going to be a third, fourth line guy. You need to get dirty. You need to get into the corners. You need to use that body of yours. You're not a finesse player in this league. You're not good enough to be that. And I think Kendall McArdle figured that out, and I thought he played pretty well, played within his capabilities. But at the end of the day, he probably needed a change of scenery. You know, he's going to a new franchise, almost a fresh start. And, I think the world of Kendall McArdle, great kid, hard worker, one of the hardest workers you're ever going to meet. And, I really hope it works out for him. And I think it will. I think the kid's got the work ethic, and he's got a great head on his shoulders. So, I really think it'll work out for him in Winnipeg.
George Richards of the Miami Herald, thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll see you in Winnipeg this coming season.
All right, sounds good. We'll talk to you later.
Take care, George. Thanks very much.
See you.
Let's head to commercial break. When we come back, we'll wrap it up with one final segment. Cheers and jeers to wrap the whole thing up. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to tonight's guests from the Bergen Record, Andrew Gross, and from the Miami Herald, George Richards. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes, subscribe, and get the show sent to your iPod each and every week. Richard Pollock, some clarification.
Well, in terms of, we talked about the cap and when exactly it's in force. We talked about the dates. As per CapGeek, the active roster exists from the day before the start of the regular season until the last game of the league year. So that's what you have to work with.
You're allowed to be 10% over up until the day before the start of the season. That's right?
Yes, I believe that's the case.
Okay, thank you. So there you go, some clarification. And somebody who's in the AHL at the end of,
I think that's the case. We're not 100% sure on if you can, looking at over the cap. But
you never hear of anybody getting called up during the off season, though, right. Or anything like that. So you have to believe that to be the case. It makes sense. I mean, there's no reason for people to be balancing the salary cap that severely during the. I'll tell you what, if you're over the salary cap, even with the extra 10% leverage that you get in the off season, you got some salary cap problems. You might want to find a new capologist.
Right.
That's all I'm saying. Michael Remus, you've been operating the Illegal Curve chat room at www.illegalcurve.com. What's been happening in the chat room so far this evening?
You know, we got a great lively chat going on there. Everyone's coming on down and having
a great time.
What are you doing? A commercial?
What are you, a carny?
I don't know.
Talk like a normal human being.
I got to pump the chat, you guys.
You can pump the chat without talking, without it being one run-on sentence the entire time. We got some questions from the chat room.
You want to sound like Roman with broken sentences?
Yeah.
Okay, anywho, so we got a great chat. We got a question from a chatter on the chat room. Is that what they are, chatters?
They can be chatters, sure.
Chatters from House of Puck. He wants to know, where do you guys see the team finishing this year? You know, he lists about six teams that are decidedly better than the Jets.
We went over this last
a few weeks ago,
yeah,
I think.
And we basically thought there were four teams.
Well, hold on. You and Drew said that.
Oh, that's right. You weren't here.
No. I think
he was here. We just ignored him.
No, you didn't ignore me. You discredited me.
Did
Richie continue? You make your prediction. Then I'll.
Well, no. I think when there's four teams when we went through, there's four teams that we thought could be better than. You know, a very good argument could be put forth. That would be the Islanders is one, Toronto two, Ottawa three, and the fourth team was
Florida.
So those four teams. But you can argue they could be worse than those teams. The other 11, the other 10, I didn't think personally they could be better than. I mean, could obviously always, but are, no.
Right now, July 13th, we thought that the Jets were the
11th, 12th
in the Eastern Conference.
Once again, that's you and Richie. Yeah. I think the Jets will make the playoffs, and they'll get the last playoff spot.
Put it on the board.
I wouldn't be shocked if it happens, simply because I think there might be something about the momentum of the first year in the city, blah, blah, blah. I put a lot into those intangibles. You guys generally don't.
It wears down after 82 games.
Yeah, it wears down after 82 games. That's totally fair. But you know what? The only reason I say so is because they had no business making the playoffs in 1996. 95, 96, they were not a playoff team, yet they snuck into the eighth playoff spot in the Western Conference, got those extra games as sort of a thank you to the fans more than anything. So, you know, they're not an overwhelmingly talented team. They are not. They shouldn't, based on talent, make the Eastern Conference playoffs. But that's not to say that they won't.
You know, the one thing about the Jets that they really don't have is there someone, you know, on their team that when they have the puck, you're legitimately scared. Oh, what's going to happen? What's this guy going to do? Like, you know,
and that guy's going to be Nikolai Antropov.
No, it's Kane. That one guy.
I was kidding. Kane.
In terms of the excitement level.
Right.
But you're right. Exactly. I mean, their top most reliable scorer, Andrew Ladd, can't say enough good things about him. Put up good points against other teams' top players last year. But 2 years ago, he was on the third line of a Stanley Cup champion. So,
yeah. I mean, he's become a first-line player almost by default.
I want to get this into it. I think Richie studied at UND, so my segue is that a guy that I think is going to surprise a lot of people, I'm not saying he's going to score 80 points, Jason Gregoire.
Yeah, I agree.
I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. Kyle wrote an article about Jason Gregoire on illegalcurve.com, had a very good season at UND, Drew, and a lot of other teams were interested in him, and he chose Winnipeg.
Yep.
And I think he's going to surprise people. He's going to be the type of guy that when he has the puck, he's going to do things with it.
All right, I got a rapid-fire question for you guys. Over, under on Manitoba players signed to the Jets for the rest of the year. I said at 1.5. What do you got? Over or under?
For the in terms of the rest of the free agency? Under, I think.
Going to the AHL, too?
Yeah, for the
I'm
whole franchise.
Say signing or acquire by trade as well?
It doesn't matter.
Number. Okay.
I'll set at 1.5. What do you guys think?
I'm going to say under. I'll say one.
You think one more?
Yeah.
Well, who they have that's sort of a Manitoban right now? They got
Derek Meach,
and Fair.
Fair.
Is there going to be a fourth? Is what the question? Is there going to be
no?
Is there going to be a fourth and a fifth?
I think it'll be a fourth.
Yeah.
You think there'll be a fourth?
Yeah.
And you just
I don't have anybody on. You're putting me on the spot here.
I know. Just nobody jumps to mind. Just you think there'll be.
They drafted Jason Kasdorf.
Well, we're not talking about draft. We're not talking about draft so much. We're talking about players who could slot into the NHL.
I'm
going
to go over too.
Well, what if they should sign a guy like Shane Knighty to play in the AHL and then come up
accounts.
Once in a while?
Put it on the board.
Yeah,
it definitely counts. I mean, it's a fun question to ask. It's a good question.
Good little question right there, Reem.
Any other Reem?
Yeah, we got one question from Luke Miguez, frequent commenter on IC. He suggested that, you know, maybe slot in Bogosian with Enstrom, as he says Enstrom is, you know, the Jets' best player in his opinion currently.
Yeah, I would.
Maybe on the power play.
I would probably agree with that. I'm a big Tobias Enstrom fan. Does that make sense? Yeah, I think what happened was with Bogosian coming in so young, they tried to put him with a veteran. I think with 3 years under his belt now, pairing him with Enstrom as a top combination may be something that they will look into. I mean, obviously, Dudley saw Buffins being that big guy, and he gave him the $5.2 million a year to try and justify his thinking behind that. But I think that's something that I think I would bet we would see him more than a little bit next year. I think that's a good thought.
And I mean, can Bufflin and Bufflin is going to be okay defensively playing with a guy like Oduya?
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, I think you have to throw him around a bit, see what they can do, and give Bufflin a little more responsibility defensively, because if you're paying him $5.2 million, you better justify that contract. Quickly, before we go to cheers and jeers, another thing on the offseason cap from CapGeek. A player with a cap hit of $1.25 million, for example, signed to a one-way deal, like a Cota Leak is, and was assigned to the AHL in the previous season, which he was, and spent no days on an NHL roster, which he wasn't. So there's a lot of things that go into it. We're not going to get into it because it's too confusing. But all it is Cota Leak will be counted against the cap, whatever his deal is, whether they want to.
Whatever Buffalo decides.
We'll do more research on that and come back
so
next week.
What you're saying is that it doesn't serve them to put him in the AHL.
Well, it might
for cap relief.
It might. But I don't know if you can.
They can't right now, is what I believe the case to be. Sure. But we'll find out.
We'll find out. We'll bring him back.
That's right. We'll bring it up next week for all those who are on tenterhooks waiting to find out about the status of Alex.
Are you
going to
blow your nose in the middle of the segment?
I'm trying my best not to, but it's becoming a losing battle.
You're a little nasally today, Drew.
I have a cold. I'm sorry. Let's go to cheers and jeers, and you won't have to hear it much longer.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Aside from obviously jeering the cold that I have, I'll start with you there, Dr. Pollock.
I usually do cheers, but I'm going to do a jeer to Steve Tambellini. I think the misuse of Andrew Cogliano made him expendable, at least in Tambellini's eyes, and I thought that was a wasted asset. I know a second-round pick can carry some value, not as much, in my opinion, to what Andrew Cogliano can bring to the table with his speed. His hands aren't great, but he has some attributes that I think have a lot of value, and I think Anaheim made a good move, but Tambellini gets my jeer because when it isn't drafting first overall or later on in the draft when he doesn't even make those picks, he doesn't really seem to be doing anything right.
Seems fair enough, especially Cogliano being a former first-round pick himself.
That too, but I believe that was under former regime.
I think you're right, but it's worth noting anyways. Ezra Ginsberg.
I agree with Richie. I like the Cogliano move. I think the Ducks win that trade. I'm going to cheer the New York Rangers. Andrew Gross, who we had on earlier today, on his blog posted this. His blog is Ranger Rant. The New York Rangers established a scholarship honoring Derek Boogaard, who passed away. And they're going to basically, give young hockey kids the chance to go to hockey camp. And I have it written down here. It's going to be called Rangers Youth Hockey Camp. And they're going to give scholarships to two youngsters every year. So I was in St. Paul for the draft with Remus. They mentioned Derek Boogaard's name in St. Paul. The crowd went nuts. He was a very well-liked guy, and this is a very classy thing that the Rangers have done, so that's my cheer.
Agreed wholeheartedly there. Michael Remus, you going to join us for cheers and jeers?
Yeah, I got one ready this time. I'm going to cheer P.K. Subban. He recently came back as it went on a trip to Haiti, to help out with the
earthquake recovery.
The earthquake. Yeah. And he said it was a life-changing experience. Anyone who can go and help out and do that, I'll give him a big cheer.
Hey, I like that.
Would you say that St. Paul, the draft, was a life-changing experience for you?
I think absolutely. Going with you and spending 3 days with you was a life-changing experience.
Yeah, especially now that they both have criminal records, it definitely was a life-changing experience.
I wish we had that snoring clip again.
Yeah, we'll get that we'll bring that up for next week. I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers this week, but I'm going to jeer Bill Waters.
He was
criticizing the Maple Leafs' acquisition of Cody Franson.
Good player.
I like Cody Franson, but that's not why I'm cheering. The way he cheered him is that he described Franson as the type of guy who would be likely to appear at the July 3rd parade. Now, the July 3rd parade is a reference to Toronto's Gay Pride Parade. I didn't expect that we were beyond that in terms of in society nowadays, but given the Toronto Maple Leafs stand and their aggressive stand against homophobia, you would hope that the rights holders, the radio station that broadcast them as the rights holders for the Leafs game, would be a little bit more sensitive and a little bit more cultured and not try and denigrate a guy by making light of anybody who's got anybody who's homosexual. So I thought that was uncalled for and deserving of a jeer in this day and age.
Totally agree.
Okay, glad to hear it. That's it for this Wednesday evening on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Programming note, we're on this coming Monday. We are on Monday of this week coming up, so in a quick 4-day turnaround, we'll be back, and then we're on. Then we're on for the next 4 Thursdays. So Monday, then the next 4 Thursdays, appointment viewing. Big thank yous today to George Richards of the Miami Herald. A big thank you to Andrew Gross of the Bergen Record. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes, subscribe, and get it sent to your iTunes account each and every week. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And make sure you constantly go to www.illegalcurve.com for all your latest breaking Jets news and original pieces and articles.
True, we got to get out of here. We got to go get our sandwich made here.
That's where we're going, of course.
So it's brisket.
Brisket, mashed potatoes, rye bread.
Who mentioned mashed potatoes?
Remus made it mashed.
Coleslaw.
We're arguing about that. That's an option.
Is there mustard, though?
I think mustard.
On the side, or?
Dill pickle.
Yep. I think just the marinade from the brisket will do fine. Just pour it on top. It'll be great.
Certainly not going to be healthy, but that's right up my alley. For Richard Pollock, for Ezra Gensburg, for Michael Remus, for producer Tim, I am Drew Mandel. Good night and good luck.